Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is podcast 346, live from Phoenix, Arizona. We are this is a great night because, I've been dealing with a power issue in the vehicle for quite some time, and today we took some steps, and tomorrow morning we're going to install this thing called an inverter, which will give me 110 power or 120 power, whatever you call it, on the go. And we are hooked up to shore power as we speak, which means that I can just run the electrical equipment in here in the podcast ambulance without having to start anything up. So you can enjoy the absolute quiet. And for those of you in the upper Midwest, you can hear I've got all the doors open in the podcast ambulance. So the back doors are wide open and the side door is open. And so you can hear what's going on outside. And in a minute here, I'm gonna make some coffee for the first time in my coffee maker. So I'm really, actually, that's the thing that excites me more than anything. So I'm gonna do that here very shortly. So yeah, it is spring in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I'm down here in Arizona, so it's just beautiful. I mean, it's 80 degrees right now, at least. Beautiful evenings are fantastic, and I know that the trees haven't budded yet in Minnesota, and of course there might be just a little bit of snow surprises and winter weather between now and May in the upper Midwest and Minneapolis, St. Paul. But no matter what, you know it's coming, and that is a relief. So here's the deal. All winter long, your furnace and water heater have been working overtime, and as we head into warmer weather, you can add your air conditioning to the list. This is actually a good time to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating out to check all of your systems. You'll probably have to wait for the AC because it has to be at least 70 degrees for Ryan to check your AC, so you can file that away. But it's a good time to have Ryan Plumbing come out and look at all the pipes and things of that nature. If you had frozen pipes or any issues, you might want to check and make sure everything is functioning, especially with the water heater. And of course, there's always the question of your filters. And have them do an efficiency check while you're at it, because they can save you a ton of money when it comes to efficiency if everything is operating correctly. Greg gave me a long speech about that one night, what they can actually do for efficiency and your furnace. And this is a good time to do it, and it's a good time to do it for next year as well. But it goes for your house. It also goes for you if you have rental property, to remember that Ryan Plumbing is available for emergency service, because when you have an emergency with plumbing, you want reliable, dependable service. And of course, that is Ryan. In St. Paul, you can call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Remember, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating for emergency service in St. Paul, 224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, so let's get the coffee. There's going to be some noise, but I'm going to get the coffee maker out and open it up and talk while I'm doing that. So I'm going to move over this way. You can hear the traffic out there. And I mentioned the thing about the upper Midwest, because if you live in the upper Midwest, just hearing the bugs. And I've been out here just having the sun on my face and getting a sunburn. It is beautiful in the Southwest. It's 90 to 100 every day. And I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. And it's so great to hear the bugs and everything else. So I'll let you sort of hear the bugs while I move stuff around here and get my coffee maker. So I got the... making a little noise moving the microphones around. And the cool thing about having shore power, having full electric power and everything, is I'm using the studio mics and all the studio stuff, where when I'm on the run and I can't use the electricity, I can't do that. So that's one of the things I like about it, is that, and the whole reason for getting this thing is studio quality podcasts from the road. So I'm not stuck using a portable recorder, or I mentioned in a couple other podcasts, I've got three levels, basically. I've got this level, which is the studio level, and then I have the, I have two other microphones that I can use that, and systems to record stuff. But You know, portable recording systems are great. They're fairly good quality, but it's not like having the studio mics, and it's not like having... So you can get a real sense for what this thing actually sounds like and get a real sense of environment in the ambulance, which is great. So I bought this coffee maker because I was really excited about making coffee on the road. Like I had these visions of myself, but I'll be able to do this as soon as the inverter's put in tomorrow. You know, I'll be able to do that. So I got this little Black & Decker four or five cup coffee maker. From Target. And whoops, I hate to keep hitting the microphone, but I'm doing that. And the plan is to, this is just a really tight spot here, sorry. The plan is to, I've got the coffee maker, and I'll be able to, I won't have to drink any more Flying J coffee. I'll be able to pull into the Flying J and start up the engine and make coffee, and it's fantastic. So I'm very excited about that. So I keep the coffee in the cabinet where they used to put the drugs, and it has a lock on it, so you can lock the thing. But the really cool thing about it is you can open the door from the outside and resupply from the inside. So the coffee and the food stuff will all go there because I can stop at a Costco or a Trader Joe's or something and resupply all of the you know, beef jerky and stuff and nuts in the in the cabinet where the drugs used to go. So I think that's very cool. I'm very excited about that. Anyway, got the coffee maker right here, and I got a bunch of water. And I got the coffee, which I got out earlier. So that's out, ready to go. Coffee maker is all set. Let me plug it in. This thing is like 5 cups. Which for me is, 5 cups of coffee for me is a joke. But it'll get you started in the day. You know, this is the kind of thing, you see these at hotel places all over the place. You know, the little coffee makers in the hotel rooms. Okay, close that up. On. So it's on. So we're ready to make the coffee. We're making the coffee as I speak. So I pulled a bunch of stories today to talk about, and we're going to do that in podcast 346. There you go. See, you can hear the coffee, which is starting to pour into the coffee maker, which makes me very, 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 very happy. So I did a podcast about foreign policy. And, you know, I thought it was probably, I thought, well, I don't know how many people are talking about this foreign policy stuff. And today there are tons of things being written and lots of opinion percolating on the Iran thing. And the only thing, there's a couple of things I wanted to add to that podcast. I think I did that podcast, like I was pretty tired that day. And one of the things I left out about this 3-page agreement that supposedly they're working so hard to come to an agreement on, that I know it's critical of the Obama administration to say this, and you know, some people don't care about that. In fact, they would prefer that I be even more critical. And I guess that's an interesting point. That's a great point to start with. Why are you not, you know, more viciously critical of what's going on? I don't think we should disrespect the office, and I don't think we should disrespect diplomacy to make a point. I think it's the proof's in the pudding most of the time with these policies. And I think it's perfectly safe for someone to have an opinion that a particular policy direction is going to result in negative results for the United States. And that's basically where I view whatever you want to call President Obama's foreign policy. And I think I made that pretty clear in that podcast. So they've got this 3-page effort that they're trying to put together with the Iranians. And somebody today wrote a piece that said even Neville Chamberlain wouldn't agree to something like this. This is just outrageous. This agreement gives Iran everything. It gives them the ability to crank up very quickly their production, fissionable nuclear material production very quickly, in as quickly as a year after the agreement, is reached. Is this a treaty? No. This is a 3-page agreement So it's a three-page agreement with the six nations, including the United States, I believe, that are trying to negotiate this deal. Now, as I speak, the deadline is Wednesday night. So it's Tuesday in podcast time, Tuesday night, March 31st. So the deadline is, I think, midnight Wednesday. So it's either, I don't know whether it's midnight Wednesday there or not, but it's funny that it's April Fool's Day. That's the that the agreement must be signed. And there's a whole discussion about whether or not we should extend the deadline to keep the negotiations going. The three-page agreement, my understanding is, they want a three-page agreement because that's not something that they have to do through Congress. Once again, this is another effort by the president to circumvent Congress and the wishes of Congress, which is dangerous because Congress is, you know, whatever you want to say about Congress, Congress essentially, especially the House of Representatives, represents the American people, and it has a say and a vote in these foreign policy matters. If it's done exclusively through the executive branch, boy, it better be a good deal, because if it isn't, that's going to come back to bite us. But it isn't; it doesn't have the same binding nature that a full treaty would have. And I think the idea is if they can sign a three-page agreement, it will have the force of being this agreement between these five or six nations and Iran. They will lift the economic sanctions, and Iran would be able to resume full nuclear production of fissionable material, you know, the kind of material that you use in a bomb, within a year. So they really don't get much. And what we're being told by a lot of the people who are writing about this, at least on one side, is do the Iran deal. It doesn't matter because the alternative is war. And that's really actually a straw man argument, because or a false choice, that we have a choice between having this giant war or letting them get what they want. That's really not the situation. And it's important that people understand there are many options that the United States and other countries have in terms of dealing with a potential Iranian nuclear development, that are some are military, some are diplomatic, some we don't have to do this deal to quote unquote avoid a war. And we don't have to do this deal to cooperate, to get Iran to cooperate with us on fighting ISIS, because the Iranians are the enemy of ISIS anyway, and they're going to do what they're going to do anyway. So this agreement really doesn't get the United States much of anything. And it's really important people understand what it will do is it, once they get this, and I said this in the other podcast, once they're perceived as getting the best of the United States in this particular deal, it will spur other countries on to doing the same thing. So it creates a nuclear race in the Middle East at a time that we can all ill afford that. So I think that's the main thing. Now, on the other side of the political spectrum, you have people like former UN ambassador under the Bush administration, and for the life of me, I can't remember his name right now, saying, and others saying, well, we should bomb Iran. We can bomb them to stop it. And the truth is, a couple of pinpoint strikes could conceivably push back their nuclear development. So the economic sanctions have not stopped the Iranian effort to produce a nuclear weapon, even though contrary to what people are saying. And I'd say this is a pretty important story. You know, it's not gonna, there's not going to be a nuclear war tomorrow if Iran gets the bomb. And it isn't going to be this huge thing that if they don't get this agreement, we're going to have this terrible situation tomorrow. This is a long-term thing. And therefore, it's not something that is really covered that extensively or that people worry too much about, because whether or not this thing goes down on April 1st or April 10th or next year isn't going to affect anyone. I think the thing that's very interesting is almost craven, I would actually have to say it's a craven nature of the Obama administration to get this deal, because this is all part of his heritage. This is all part of his legacy. This is all part of what people will say Obama did after he was in office. And I don't think he really cares about the security of the United States. I think he's more concerned about his own legacy at this point, that they'll be able to say that he came into office saying that he would talk to the Iranians and get a deal, and he did. Well, you know, he got a he'll have a three-page agreement, which doesn't have the force of treaty, which the Congress has already said that they're against, which is contentious in the extreme and may or may not cause a lot of other problems in the Middle East. So it's something to really pay attention to over the next few weeks. Well, it looks like the coffee's ready, which means I got these to-go cups at Costco. And this time I actually say, usually I throw out the plastic tops. This time I actually saved the plastic tops. So I've got cups and I've got plastic tops so I don't spill all over the place, which is great. take out one of these cups and then for the time being, I'll just put this down here with everything else that from the flotsam of coffee production. And, you know, here's what I do with these coffee makers, these drip coffee makers like Mr. Coffees and stuff. As soon as the coffee is brewed, I turn off the burner. And I do that because all it does is it burns the coffee. Now, this is what's great about this. Just imagine, and you'll hear me doing this, but just imagine I'm on the road someplace, sitting outside a Flying J someplace in Northern California on my way back home. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's time for me. I just woke up and it's time for me to have a cup of coffee. Well, I've got it. That is music to my ears. And of course, these goddamn things drip. And I don't understand why they do. When you pour, they drip. They all do. Anyway. So the Iran thing was an interesting thing that I was looking at. And the other thing that's great about having electricity is, you know, I've got my printer now. So I can print and I can read. And I'm completely back to, you know, this is exactly what I do at home, except I can do it on the road. So it's really cool. So the Iran story is very big. There's a couple of other big stories. Obviously, the Indiana thing is almost going to have to be a separate podcast. A lot being said about that right now. It's discriminatory and everything else. I think the jury is out on that. And I think there's differing legal opinions about whether these laws are discriminatory. And based on what I've read today, I think there's an awful lot of knee-jerk reaction on the left to this, particularly with Tim Cook, the head of Apple, writing this thing today and saying that it's a bad law. But if you read what Tim Cook wrote, what he's really saying is Apple is a really cool company. It's open. It's, you know, he's using this as essentially a public relations opportunity. That's the key, and I think that's important to point out. And I'll actually look at that story a little bit more in depth. You know, in future podcasts. So I don't want to get too much into it. Now, I talk a lot about manufacturing on the Bob Davis podcast. So let's talk about manufacturing and Bockland R&D for a second. Lots of development at Bockland so far in the new year. First of all, if you're in the manufacturing business or you're interested in what Bockland R&D does, there's an updated all-new Bockland.com website, and you can see all the stuff that they're doing. And I've looked at a lot of manufacturing company websites, and Bockland's website is by far the most robust because it provides information for you guys. The other thing is, if you're listening to this podcast on March 30, this is going to be posted on March 31st, check out Bockland, Bockland.com, because John Bockland is going to be hosting a webinar on March 31st on Bockland.com focusing on 3D printing for production, planning, and tooling. So today is the day. Also, check out the links to Tara Bockland's Healthy Life blog. Living healthy is really an important value for all Bockland employees. It's central to the company. We've discussed this in other podcasts, and they're doing some amazing things when it comes to making sure that people are living a healthy style, a lifestyle that work for Bockland R&D. So remember, wicked fast turnaround times, innovative solutions, real client service, real resources about Bockland at Bockland.com. Here's what you do. You can go to Bockland.com, Bockland.com, or contact Joe Dorn or Andy Bleck at Bockland.com and ask what they can do for you. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today at Bockland R&D. Bockland.com, Bockland.com. I'll tell you what I did find. I found this great story. This is really interesting. You hear all the time that the millennials are moving into urban areas. And it's very interesting because the new census population estimates are out today. And I don't know what level we're at in terms of updates of this data. So it's hard for me to say. The last census was 2010 and the next census will be 2020. So these are estimates. These are updates. But it's very interesting. Only two metros added more than 100,000 people between July 2013 and July 2014, Houston and Dallas. But the bigger piece of this, the bigger headline of this, is that these are generally not very dense. They're very suburban cities. And they're saying, wow, net domestic migration between 2010 and 2014 by metro, New York lost the most, Chicago was second, Los Angeles was third, Detroit was fourth, Philadelphia was fifth, Cleveland was sixth, and the cities that gained are San Antonio, Denver, Phoenix, Austin, Dallas, and Houston. So people are moving to southwestern and warmer climates. Denver is very interesting. And these are diffused cities. They're not urban areas. So once again, we're being told we have to create these urban centers in, and these urban centers where, you know, it's bohemian culture and it's condos downtown. A lot of it's subsidized. There's entertainment that are subsidized, and there's a lot of effort, you know, building light rail trains that plug into these downtown areas. And we're always told that the reason that we're doing this is that millennials want to live in these kinds of hip downtown areas. But what I think is interesting is in the last 10 years, what we're seeing is movement to some of these smaller cities. And I think largely it's due to economic opportunity. I mean, two of the biggest growth cities are in, you know, Texas, which you know, we had a recession, but Texas didn't suffer as much as other places and certainly didn't suffer as much as big states like New York and Illinois and places like that, Chicago and New York. So that's part of it. But I think it's interesting because it shows, I'm not sure that I believe, and I've had many, many arguments with my friends about this. You know, we'll go downtown, and I live in Minneapolis, so we'll go downtown Minneapolis on a Friday night, and, you know, they've created this downtown experience in downtown Minneapolis. They did it by subsidizing the train. They've done it, but there's a fair amount of buildings down there, and I, you know, figuring out the subsidies for the buildings and the venues and the entertainment complexes is because the newspaper does not tell you what subsidized and what isn't. A good case in point in Minneapolis, you know, Bill McGuire, who worked for United Health for years, and you know, very wealthy businessman, is now apparently bought the soccer team, and he wants to build a stadium in Minneapolis for the soccer team. And not one article that I have seen in the Star Tribune, or, and I haven't seen anywhere, any place else, they're just, Star Tribune just loves the idea that we would have the soccer team. And many of you listening remember the Kicks games at the old Met Stadium, where nobody ever went in and watched the game because we were all partying outside. But the Kicks games were something in the 1970s. And I think the thing was, it was more of a tailgate party than it was anything else. And they're seeking to recreate this with a soccer stadium. Well, none of these articles tell you what the deal is and how much it's going to cost the people of Minneapolis to do this. And we're back again with this whole thing about, you know, here I'm this big rich guy and I could probably afford with my partners to borrow, at least borrow the money to build the stadium. We could certainly afford that. And many of us are really rich people, so, you know, the Pollard family, I think they're involved, Glenn Taylor, they got the money to build the stadium themselves. Watch them try to get taxpayers pay for a soccer stadium. And why? Because we're in this business of creating these venues and these facilities in downtowns, because the idea is we're going to create this residential base in downtown. And something like, I don't know, downtown now has something like 30,000 residents, and they're just ballyhooing this. This is incredible growth, and it's amazing what's happening. And then you look at the broader picture nationwide and you see two metros. I'll read it again. Dallas and Houston added 100,000 people in the last 4, 5, 6 years since 2010. So people are not necessarily moving into these urban places. And I'm seeing data also that says millennials are moving to where the jobs are. They're moving to opportunity cities. And opportunity cities can be places like Des Moines. They can be places like Austin, Texas. They can be places that are not necessarily urban in nature. They're more spread out even than Minneapolis. So I think that's an important thing. And it's an argument. If you're in the midst of a discussion with somebody who's talking about how great light rail is and look what it has done for downtown and look for this, that, and the other thing, then you're going to, this is a good thing to bring up to say, well, how do we know people are going to move to downtowns? And, you know, my theory is that they aren't going to move to downtowns. My theory is the downtowns are going to become those apartments downtown, and I may be wrong, I may not live this long, but we'll see. I think that the apartments downtown in at some point in the future will be a lot cheaper than they are, because I think that they're going to be hard-pressed to keep people living there when the jobs are out in the suburbs and places like that. Case in point, Target letting go a lot of people from their headquarters because they've got two campuses outside of the city. Now, if you're a young person, you're working your first job out of college, having to drive town and park and everything else is a problem, and taking the bus is just as much of a problem. Everybody talks about how great the bus is. I have a friend that takes the bus every day to go downtown, works at a job downtown, takes the bus every day. And you guys all know my stories. That's the reason I started riding my bike to work at KSTP, because I remember one night waiting for the bus, and there was one driver on the 16, no, it was the 17, who was the slowest man on the planet. He was incredibly slow. And I thought to myself, I'll bet that I can beat that bus walking. And damned if I didn't. I beat it to Uptown walking. I told that story on the air of how I beat the bus. I left downtown, and the whole reason was I had to go to the bathroom. So I went around a corner and went to the bathroom, you know, number one. And then I walked up to Uptown, and at that time, there was it was a Burger King, and now it's the Uptown Diner. And I looked up. I had to go again, so I went around back by the garbage can. And then I looked up, and here came that guy, that bus driver, because he had white hair, and I'll never forget that guy. He was so slow, it drove me crazy. If you were on the bus, you were like, I could walk faster than this, and I proved that I could. And it was winter, and I said to myself, well, if I can beat the bus walking, imagine what I can do on a bike. So that's when I started riding my bike. I hate the bus, and I hate bus I realize bus transit's important and everything else, but this idea that we're going to have people coming into downtown on public transit to work and live and everything else is, I don't think it's necessarily true. You can create the conditions that create it for a time, but it's extremely expensive to do that. You have to subsidize venues. You have to even subsidize the construction of some of the condominiums. And like I said, if you want to find out which buildings are subsidized and which aren't and everything else, you're going to be hard pressed to figure it out. It's not something that is necessarily, it's public knowledge, but it's not necessarily obvious. The most obvious subsidies are the stadiums. And so don't get me started about it. I just don't think it's a good idea to force people into downtown areas when people actually enjoy living in suburban areas. Now, I'm in Scottsdale right now, not Phoenix. And Scottsdale is a classic suburban town. I mean, there's a downtown Scottsdale. They're trying to revitalize it and make a downtown Scottsdale. But everybody lives in this suburban area. And I will tell you, the left is back at it again, and how suburbs are destroying the economy and the environment, and they're awful places to live and everything else. I don't think they're so awful. You know, I live in the suburbs now, and I've lived in the city. I've lived in all kinds of cities. And I like living in the suburbs. I like being able to go to the Costco or the Walmart or the haircutting place or wherever, and I don't have to walk, you know, on the street. And there's not this relentless pressure to have to say hello to the people, because when you live in a city, you live in a neighborhood, you know, and it's like living in a small town. Pretty soon, if you live in a neighborhood and you work and you operate in the same neighborhood over, you get to know everyone, and that's good. But sometimes it can be tedious, because sometimes you don't want to talk to people. All right, enough said on that. Now, I got to say one thing. As long as we're talking about trains before the end of this podcast, I should mention. The first thing is, you understand, especially you people in Minnesota, you know that the legislature and the governor, and this was bipartisan, Tom Bach, the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat, and Kurt Dowd, the House Speaker, Republican, worked out with the Democrat governor that they weren't going to give these people at the commissioner level these huge raises. And the governor agreed to it. And here we find out that the current head of the Met Council is making $123,000, which is a doubling, at least, of his previous salary of $61,000. And the governor went ahead and just increased his salary. And the excuse is, well, this is a full-time job. There's all this stuff that Met Council has to do. Well, that's exactly what many of us are tired of hearing about. We feel that the Met Council is doing too much. The Met Council is another one of these unelected boards that has its fingers in every pie, in every county, in every city in the metropolitan area. It was meant as a sewer district originally when it was formed, and has morphed into essentially a governmental body. And I think it's bad that we have this. I think we ought to really think about abolishing the Met Council. It's turned into an unelected board of governors, is what it is. It's the governor's private little Praetorian implementation facility. And then this makes me happy, 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 because this is how we stop these projects in total. Minnetonka is now suing the Met Council over the Southwest LRT line, but this is what's really interesting. It's not the rich people in the houses in Minnetonka. This is about 100 residents in an apartment complex along the line where the train is going to run, and they're saying it's going to ruin. I got to take a sip of coffee. Ooh, delicious. It's going to ruin the view, and it's going to ruin the community and everything else. So if you want to know how to stop light rail, this is what you have to do. You have to divide and conquer. You have to get a bunch of these little community agencies, these little community groups that organize, get some standing in some way, shape, or form to either show up at these board meetings and get them to stop and think about what they're doing, or to sue them for some reason to prevent them from doing this. If we can keep the light rail plan locked up in court for the next 20 years, I believe that the driverless car will obviate light rail and most of mass transit. I think the driverless car is definitely coming. Somebody told me somewhere today, I think it was my friend Andy's wife, that their driverless cars are all over California. And that's one of the things I'm going to be looking for when I head out. So people are used to seeing them now in California because they're testing them in California and I believe Nevada. So we'll be seeing these. And I think driverless technology is going to drastically change how people get around in metropolitan areas. And I think it's, you know, the train is something that's over 100 years old. They started putting these commuter lines in American cities, big old American industrial cities, Detroit and Chicago and New York, around the turn of the century. So this is a turn of the century from the 1900s idea that has simply been repurposed for the current time frame because government people, statists, just love trains. They love them. They're absolutely passionate about how wonderful they are. And I could go on and on about it, but I won't. That's another podcast. I think the point here is that the way that you beat them is you tie them up in court forever. Once again, thanks to Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Greg and I hang out a lot, and I ask him always, what do you want me to say? And he said, what do you want me to say in the podcast? And he said, just remember to tell people, we get a lot of emergency business. We get a lot of emergency calls, and we always take care of people, and that's so important. So if you have a plumbing emergency, you're like, well, who do I call? And, you know, I'm just here to tell you, if you want reliable service, then you want Ryan Plumbing and Heating because they've been doing it for four generations. Here's the number. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. RyanPlumbing.com. The numbers are there. Call them if you need them for emergency service. And don't forget, they can also check your AC and everything else. And thanks once again to John Bachlin for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. On March 31st, if you're hearing this anytime after, check out the Bachlin R&D website, B-A-K-L-U-N-D, Bachlin.com. I'm sure John will leave the webinar that he hosts on March 31st up there on the page, which focuses on 3D printing for production planning and tooling. If you want to know about 3D printing, John's one of the few people in manufacturing that's figured out how to monetize 3D printing at the small business level. So definitely check that out. And thank you, John, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Also have to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis podcasts. Complete Home Service and Remodeling, whatever your home or business needs. Brent and Julie are contractors. They do great work. You click on that, takes you to their business website. You can see all the stuff that they do and contact with them. Also, Mad K Studios, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. Click on these banners and all the banners at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com for more information. And thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. Social media is so important to those of us doing digital media. And I love the comments and, of course, all of the support on Instagram, too. The handle on Instagram is bdavis7843. And, of course, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. They are keeping me in Komodo Dragon Coffee on the road from Phoenix, Arizona, and L.A. is next on the list. Thanks for listening to Podcast 346, The Bob Davis Podcasts.